Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Jonathan Bennett joins me. We're going to be talking about Libre Planet, the Free Software Foundation's own conference. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Jonathan Bennett. Episode 425, recorded March 14th, 2017, Libre Planet. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by GoCD, an on-premise, open-source, continuous delivery server by ThoughtWorks. GoCD gives you complete control of and visibility into your deployments across multiple teams. Since GoCD is open source, you can download and use it for free. To discover the power of their pipelines, visit gocd.io/twit. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, Libre, open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, the little projects, projects you may be using every day and totally unaware of it, projects you might want to download right after this show, and sometimes we even talk about conferences that you might want to sign up for right after this show. I think today is going to be one of those. Joining me today is Jonathan Bennett as my co-host. Jonathan, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Cool, cool. And where are you speaking to us from?
Corporate headquarters, the home office in Lawton, Oklahoma.
You need to get around more. You're always in the same spot. I get a different spot every time I do this show, but that's because I am
last week I drove 3,000 miles. I think I'll stay put for a little while. Thanks.
Okay. And how's the weather? How's the weather in Oklahoma? Is it crazy or
it's beautiful. We were supposed to get some rain. I don't think that ever happened. But it's like I think in the 60s today, maybe the 70s. It's nice.
Cool, cool. And I'm speaking to you, for those who are watching the video, they recognize the background here. This is the my brother's den up in Lacey, Washington. This is I'm moving out all my stuff tomorrow, moving back to Portland permanently again because, 6 months is a long welcome stay, and I pretty much outdid my welcome. So it's time for me to go back to Portland and stay there. But it's been great. It's been great being with the family through the holidays to, heal and repair after my brother died last year. So I'm glad to have done this. This is a good thing. But I will kind of miss the deer. There's no deer today, so we should be okay with that. we could keep talking forever, but really we have a very important topic for today because we are going to be talking to John Sullivan of the Free Software Foundation. I don't believe we've ever had anybody directly from the FSF on this show before, so this might be a first for that as well. But we're going to be talking specifically about another conference. Last week we talked about OSCON. This week we're going to be talking about Libre Planet, which is the Free Software Foundation's get-together, annual get-together. And it's coming up almost immediately. So if you're in the Boston area, we'll be talking about how you can register for that and attend. And very reasonable prices, I'd say. I shouldn't say that it's more reasonable than OSCON because you get what you pay for. But no, that's also wrong, too. Okay, now let's see how many times I can stick my feet into my mouth. Jonathan, there's too many Johns here. Jonathan, what do you know about this so far?
Well, the Free Software Foundation is obviously the 800-pound gorilla in the room of free and open source software. I actually know very little about the conference, so I'm looking forward to learning about that. And then hopefully we can sneak in some other questions about free software, open source software, and have a good interview today.
This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by GoCD. GoCD is the on-premise, open-source, continuous delivery server created by ThoughtWorks. With GoCD's comprehensive pipeline modeling, you can model complex workflows across multiple teams with ease. GoCD can easily configure dependencies for fast feedback and on-demand deployment with its parallel and sequential execution. Its fan-in, fan-out dependency management always does the right thing, avoiding spurious builds. The value stream map lets you track a change from commit to deploy at a glance. GoCD's real power is the visibility it provides over your end-to-end workflow, so you get complete control of and visibility into all your deployments across the organization. GoCD also offers complete customization for your software's individual needs. GoCD will perform tests written in most languages or frameworks. Their test reporting will tell you exactly which change set and on which platform a test started breaking. You can compare content across any two arbitrary builds, making it invaluable when troubleshooting a broken pipeline. GoCD supports auditable deployment and can delegate the configuration of pipelines to users without full-blown admin privileges. GoCD has extension points for which plugins can be created. Numerous plugins are also available to you, or you can write your own. Say goodbye to deployment panic and hello to consistent, predictable deliveries. GoCD is open source that you can download and use for free. Discover the power of their pipelines at gocd.io/twit. That's gocd.io/twit. Commercial support and enterprise add-ons, including disaster recovery, are also available. We thank GoCD for their sponsorship of Floss Weekly. Now let's go ahead and bring on our guest, John Sullivan. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Randall. Thanks for having me.
And where are you speaking to us from?
I am currently in Durham, North Carolina. I just moved here in August.
Awesome, awesome. So let's, I want to get into the background of the Free Software Foundation stuff, but I want to first sort of look specifically at the conference. So talk to us about what Libre Planet is accomplishing and maybe like the dates and stuff. Let's sort of circle in from there.
Yeah, so Libre Planet is the conference that we run every year along with the Students for Information Processing Board, which is a student group at MIT in Cambridge, Massachusetts. We've been doing it together with them for the last few years, and we've been running Libre Planet overall for, I think, 7 or 8 years now. It started out as a FSF members meeting, which is what it was when I started at the FSF in 2003. And then over time, we built it into a conference that still has a lot of FSF members present, but also has people who aren't yet, I hope, members. So the dates this year are March 25th through 26th, and it'll take place at MIT in Cambridge.
Cambridge, Massachusetts, just in case anybody doesn't know, outside of Boston.
Yeah, not to offend any of our good friends in the UK.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So this started out as just being a membership meeting. Can you describe what it means to be an FSF member?
Sure. So FSF members provide the most important part of our financial support. About 80 to 85% of our total support is from individuals, and most of that is from members. So they contribute $120 a year, $10 a month. And students, we have a special rate for that, which is half. And so part of the benefit that you get from that, other than the warm, fuzzy feeling of supporting free software, is that you get to come to this conference at no charge every year and meet up with other free software supporters.
And the purpose of the Free Software Foundation is inherent in the name, but talk about sort of the scope of what Free Software Foundation is doing.
Yeah, so the name is clear on one hand, but also, you know, a little bit misleading, because we care about software because we care about software users. And what we're after is to protect the freedom of all computer users whenever they're interacting with software. And one of the most important ways that software can hinder or respect an individual's freedom is the terms of its use. You know, often a copyright license, EULA, things like that. And so the Free Software Foundation works to make sure that the terms of all software allow users 4 basic freedoms: freedom to run the software for any purpose, freedom to modify the software, share it, and share their modified versions. And we think if those terms are respected, then users are in an empowered place. They know what their computer's doing. If it's doing bad things, they can fix it, or they can get somebody else to fix it for them. And then once it's fixed, they can share the fixed versions with other people.
And this, essentially, the FSF is embodying the original vision that Richard Stallman has. Am I correct?
That's right. And Richard Stallman's still the president of the organization, president of our board of directors.
Okay. So what happens then at Libre Planet that helps support this vision as well?
So at Libre Planet, we have a few main goals. You know, one goal is that we want to get that group of core supporters together, you know, the FSF members. And we want to be able to, you know, show them what we've been up to over the year, and we want them to be able to meet each other. And then we have another goal, which is to bring in different constituencies, including people that are brand new to free software. And that includes, in particular, focusing on groups that have been historically underrepresented in the free software community and the free software movement. And under that umbrella, then we have talks about different areas. We do have a technical component where people will give tutorials or developer seminars on their particular projects. And then we have another category, which is focused on licensing and community advocacy topics. And then kind of a third topic, which is one of the most interesting things about the conference, and that's how free software intersects with other social movements. So this year, for example, we have a keynote from Cade Crockford, who is at the ACLU of Massachusetts, and Cade will be talking about technology and liberation in the age of Trump. And that's, you know, last year we had Edward Snowden talking about the importance of free software as it relates to, you know, whistleblowing and surveillance and privacy issues.
So you just started talking about one of the things that I'm very interested in. And that is, does the Free Software Foundation work together with some of these other groups? You mentioned the ACLU. Do you guys work with the EFF, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, and some of those people? Is there a collaboration between these, you and the other groups that kind of had some shared interest in this?
Yeah, that's we do. And for example, with EFF in particular, we have had speakers at LibrePlanet from EFF the past few years. This year, Cory Doctorow is actually keynoting. And he'll be talking about DRM and, you know, the foolishness of software you can't speak because it's a circumvention of a technological protection measure. And we've worked with EFF broadly in quite a few ways. We've been part of coalitions together to fight SOPA in the United States. We have worked with them on the NSA and privacy issues. We're actually a plaintiff in a lawsuit that they filed representing several groups against the NSA who felt that communications with their members were chilled because of the mass surveillance being done at the NSA. And we work with other groups as well. I mentioned the ACLU, which was that collaboration included Snowden last year and Cade this year, as well as some other examples. So LibrePlanet is a good example of ways that we're trying to increase that collaboration. I think as computers, we've been saying for years, you know, at the FSF that software is important for you. Free software is important for you no matter what your specific social mission is, no matter what you're trying to achieve as an advocate. You need to have control over your computer and you need to have control over your communications if you're going to be truly autonomous and successful. And so with computers being much more in the news in general these last few years because of surveillance and ubiquity in general, it's really helped us find ways to work together with groups in other sectors.
So you would say that the recent events with Snowden and then even WikiLeaks releasing the large dump of CIA information, it's kind of fed back into your cause and raised public awareness?
Yeah, it's you know, it's made it a lot easier to explain what I do at the dinner table with people that aren't familiar with software. It's in the headlines, it's on the front page of the New York Times. People are much more familiar with why these issues are important. So we still face a challenge in explaining why what free software is and why it helps. You know, helps people stand up against some of these privacy invasions and surveillance that they've been reading about.
But I would imagine that it helps with the sale that one of the solutions for some of these problems is source code that's auditable and can be changed. So I have had this problem as well when you sit down with parents or in-laws or grandparents or whatever and try to explain what's going on or what you do, you know, what your job description is, and it can be a challenge. So it's interesting that kind of the rest of the world is through some of these things in the news is catching up to the idea that some of these freedoms that you guys talk about actually matter. It actually has some, you know, real world ramifications. So let's talk a little bit. One of the questions that I know is on some people's minds is when a project that, you know, let's say uses the GPL v2 or v3 for something finds their code in a commercial product without, you know, without permission, without doing it legally, what's the recourse? How do we go about trying to right some of these problems?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, GPL gives anybody the freedom to reuse software that it covers that people choose to distribute under the GPL. As long as when those people redistribute that software, they give others the same freedom. So basically the one thing it prohibits is taking somebody else's code and turning it into a proprietary product. I do want to say that, you know, proprietary and commercial are not the same thing. If in order to qualify as free software, a program actually has to allow commercial reuse. And so GPL software is commercial software. But is not proprietary software, which is often what people mean when they say commercial. And so one of the things that the FSF does on a regular basis is respond to reports where users find GPL software being used in proprietary products where the company is not sharing the source code that they're supposed to be sharing and not giving the freedom to copy, modify that source code like they're supposed to. So for our part, the FSF holds copyright that developers on the GNU project have assigned to us. And because we hold copyright, we're able to directly contact those companies and say, hey, we found a problem. Will you work with us to fix this? And then we have a process that we go through privately with the company to show them the mistakes and what they need to do. And we're able to get those things corrected. They then ship the source code they're supposed to ship. They are, you know, become basically contributing members of the free software community in a proper sense. When it comes to individuals, they have essentially the same recourse. They can either sort of sign up with an organization like us if they're part of GNU, or with an organization like Software Freedom Conservancy, which does a similar thing for other projects, including the kernel Linux. Or they can take action as an individual. And the main thing that we ask people to do is to follow a document that we co-wrote with Software Freedom Conservancy called the Principles of Community-Oriented GPL Enforcement. It's kind of a mouthful, but basically it's a series of principles for people to follow so that they keep their eye on the prize, which is to get any company which has committed a license violation integrated back into the community and not do enforcement for personal gain or to, you know, punish people to get money, that sort of thing, which, as we all know, is possible in the copyright legal system.
You know, that's one thing we've sort of been dancing around here. I don't think we actually said it in the opening, is that one of the things that the FSF is responsible for is the GNU project. Can you describe a little bit more about that? And is that the same GNU that we hear in when people describe GNU Linux?
Yes, it is. So the GNU project was started all the way back in 1984. And it was started by Richard Stallman in order to write an operating system that would replace Unix, and it would be fully free in the ways that I described earlier. And that project has been successful. So GNU Linux is used, GNU combined with the Linux kernel, now is a complete operating system that's used on, powers most of the internet, you know, powers the space station. It's used as the favorite operating system for supercomputers, and is increasingly available even on laptops and desktops. So the project continues basically to maintain that system and also to improve it, to develop new programs as necessary so that people can do everything they need to do using only free software. And lately, we're starting to look at more challenges such as mobile operating systems. You know, we have Android, which is a free software-based operating system, but we think that we need something more committed to freedom in that space, and something that's available without the proprietary programs that all Android systems come with right now. So GNU is also developing to take on challenges like that.
You know, when Richard started his work many, many years ago, he was definitely a pioneer standing out in the wilderness trying to say software should be open and free. But if you look around at the scene today, you know, there's very little stuff that's being done locked up somewhere, hidden somewhere, because the platforms available to leverage off of and the benefits that people get. I mean, we've talked to 400 projects now here on Floss Weekly that have all seen the light. Is there still a long path to go, or are we just now ensuring that we've, you know, now that we're 3/4 of the way up the mountain, we don't slide back?
We have definitely come a long way. I think the FSF, one of the things that distinguishes us most is that we continue to push the envelope to get everything to be free software. The reason that we're concerned about that is because if you look around at some of the worst abuses that have happened in the area of technology and software recently, things like, let's say, Amazon deleting copies of 1984 from people's Kindles, or, you know, Vizio spying on users through their television screens. These systems actually incorporate a lot of free software. You know, that Kindle that deleted that copy of 1984 was based on GNU Linux and published much of its source code. But the part that they didn't publish and they kept proprietary is the part that enabled Amazon to take that, you know, horrible action. And same thing with Visio, you know, using televisions based on free software, but including a proprietary layer that's not, you know, they're not, this doesn't mean they're violating a license because the GPL allows software to be aggregated. It depends, you know, but if they have, they can still put a separate component like an ebook reader on the Kindle or a viewing program on a TV, which give a foothold still. So as long as that's there, then users will not have their freedoms respected and bad things will happen. So that's why the FSF continues to push for everything to be free. And we work in areas, you know, nowadays a lot of our focus is on the driver level, proprietary firmware being required for things like Wi-Fi, GPS on mobile devices, 3D acceleration, and video almost everywhere. You know, these things are still problems, even though we've come, like you say, very far since the beginning of the movement.
And one of the other areas I think the FSF is really able to maybe make some headway is things like platform as a service, having your data be freely downloaded with things like the AGPL. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah, that's a very important issue for us. We recently published an update. We have a list called the High Priority Projects List, which is on FSF.org. And what you mentioned is on that list. It's a thing that we think is a huge priority for the free software movement to tackle. Just as we've made such great strides in freedom on the laptop, on the desktop, now people are doing much of their computing on a computer that's not even in their home. You know, they're using Gmail for email, Google Docs for word processing. And even if that software is under a free license for its owner, in other words, Google in those examples, the user doesn't have access to it. They can't change the program or ask somebody else to change the program for them because it runs on Google servers. So one of our answers to that is the Affero GNU General Public License, which is like the GPL, except that it says you also have to share the source code if you have, if you're using that software to interact with users over a network. And so if you use AGPL code to run your website, then you need to have a link to the source code that you're using. And then a second part of the solution is to just pursue more decentralized platforms in this area. One example is a project we support called GNU Media Goblin, and that is a replacement for things like Facebook, YouTube, Flickr, media sharing platforms. And the idea is that each user runs their own node, and then those nodes can talk to each other. And so there's no single point of failure. There's no silo with control over the ways that everybody shares with each other. And of course, it's free software running on users' own computers. And that's those are the main ways that we're working to tackle those that area right now.
I wanted to circle back and ask you about something that you mentioned kind of in passing, and that's firmware. And, you know, obviously there are problems here, and it is a pain when you can't use your Wi-Fi because there's some firmware blob that's not been released. Can you go into a little bit more detail about firmware and maybe even the difference between something like firmware that has to be loaded versus firmware that's, you know, permanently installed into a device and microcode and how all those things work together?
Yes. So there are where we draw the line, because we're the Free Software Foundation, is we look specifically at firmware that can be modified. So firmware that is loaded, for example, by the kernel when you plug in the device. There are other kinds of the same functionality can be physically burned into a chip on the device, at which point it can't be modified by either the user or the manufacturer once it's there. And things that are burned into a chip can certainly still impact users and impact their freedom, but they're not within our scope. So we're focusing in particular on the rights and restrictions that come with software. And so we have a program called Respects Your Freedom, which is a certification program. And we manufacturers submit their products to us, retailers actually submit their products to us, and we evaluate them to make sure that they only require free software and that they work fully well with a free software system. And if they meet those standards, then we put a certification mark on it, and users know that anything that has that mark respects their freedom. The firmware is a major part of that because, for example, one of the early devices that we certified at, under that program is a Wi-Fi dongle that does not require proprietary firmware. That was a very important device to certify because the vast majority of Wi-Fi chipsets either require a proprietary driver outright or require proprietary firmware, even if they have a free driver.
So isn't from the perspective of user freedoms, isn't it actually worse to have burned in firmware that you can't get to and you can't change? It seems almost counterproductive to say that, well, it's better to have firmware that's burned in that you can't change, you can't reload, as opposed to, you know, having firmware that you can get to, you just have to load it every time. How does that jive for the Free Software Foundation? That seems strange to me.
Yeah, it's to have it burned into a chip is not ideal. You know, we want users to be able to control as much, you know, everything that's going on their computers. But there is a difference, which is that when the software is upgradable, the manufacturer has control over it and the user doesn't. So that creates a power differential basically between the distributor of the software, the proprietary owner, and the user. That's one of the things that a dynamic that we're working to erase. So even though the idea of having upgrades to the firmware is appealing, it's also very true that often those upgrade processes are abused to install features that the user doesn't want. You know, we saw Sony take away the ability to install GNU Linux on PlayStations through an upgrade. You know, there's a long history of software companies abusing the upgrade power to install features that they want, but users, if they could choose, would reject. So even though we might worry about firmware not being able to get updates if it's burned into a chip, for example, the alternative also has huge downsides, which is giving somebody else the ability to update code on your system without your approval. It's true that devices that, when the firmware is loaded, it may be easier to reverse engineer and replace, which is something that we'll be focusing on this year. But that doesn't justify it being proprietary. So we're still going to push for that firmware to be released under a free license. We're not going to, you know, work to make sure that all firmware is burned into a chip. That's not what we're trying to achieve here.
That's good. That seems like that would be a bit counterproductive. I want to get one quick question in before we go back to the talking about the conference, because I know that's kind of our main purpose. But how does the Free Software Foundation see things like the BSD license and the Apache license? And then to take that a step further, if there's an instance where those are being abused in a way that actually violates the license, would the Free Software Foundation be willing to assist in a case like that? Or are you guys only going to help if it's one of the GPL licenses?
So we do. All of the licenses that you named, you know, the Apache BSD-style licenses, the three-clause BSD, those are free software licenses. And it's important to say that because there is a misconception out there I hear a lot, which is that people think that the GPL and copyleft licenses are free software, and that the Apache license and what people call, you know, permissive or lax permissive licenses are open source. And that's not the case. Both categories are free software licenses, and both categories are also open source licenses. For us, we do enforcement and compliance work on software that we hold the copyright on. We do have copyright on code license under the LGPL, which is a kind of permissive license. You know, it's a license that allows derivatives to be proprietary as long as they respect a certain very basic level of conditions. We don't find too many cases of license violations on permissive licenses because they allow people to redistribute the software under proprietary terms. I would say that you will notice, if you look closely, that people don't actually, the one requirement in most permissive licenses is attribution and proper display of copyright notices. And if you look closely, that's often not done correctly. In the world of JavaScript, for example, which much of which is licensed under more permissive terms, lax permissive terms, you won't see copyright notices in the minified JavaScript that's running in your browser. So people do actually violate those licenses, but not in areas where the FSF has copyright. We're focused on when it comes to enforcement and compliance work, we're focused on copyleft. That's what we think is the best kind of license, even though we also acknowledge that those others are fully legitimate free licenses.
I think you mentioned earlier that the that one of the tracks or one of the areas that will be covered at the upcoming Libre conference is this sort of legalism and legality and understanding licenses and things. Can you say what some of the classes are going to be that are related to that?
Sure. So one that jumps to mind, Bradley Kuhn, who is on our board of directors, but also president of the Software Freedom Conservancy, will be speaking about compliance work and licensing. I believe that's on Sunday during the conference. And there will be the full program for the conference is available at libreplanet.org/2017. And you can see the full list of talks there. We have Pam Chestek, who is a lawyer working in the area of free software, will be giving a talk. We have another talk by Deb Nicholson on patents, copyrights, and trademark, which I'm pretty excited about. Deb's a great speaker. So those are some of the examples that we have there. And then there's the hallway track, you know, where with some of these free software legal luminaries in the building, there's inevitably some really interesting conversations going on.
Yeah, I always find that at all the free software open source conferences that I attend is that there's always a lot going on, especially in the hallway track. So it's right around the corner. Is it too late now to register for this and make plans to be there?
No, definitely not. Registration is still open. And we will, we don't see any reason currently why we can't accept registration at the event. We would prefer the registration to register in advance so we can get the catering numbers right and that sort of thing. But you are welcome even at the very last minute.
And for people coming from out of town, do you have any kind of deals with local hotels or is that long gone?
We don't. We have a travel scholarship fund, which we do give out each year. And we try to use that in order to make sure we can bring a diverse both audience and set of speakers in. But that money is unfortunately already spent. We hope we can get more sponsorship next year so we can be much more, you know, enable many more people to come than we have been so far. But we're not having the event in a hotel, which means that we don't have a block rate set up. But we do have on the conference site a list of some possibilities. And also the Cambridge Boston area has quite a few free software people there. We're happy to have couch surfers and guests. And if you want to try and explore some of those possibilities, we have a mailing list. It's libreplanet-discuss. You can also find that on the conference site. And people talk about ride sharing, room sharing, and what they're going to meet up and do during the event.
I see some things here like introduction to Ansible. So you actually have some hands-on using free software. A good portion of the seminars or something like that. How do you get to be a speaker here? Is this something that you'll have like a call for papers for? And did I miss it 4 months ago when you had your call for papers?
Yeah, we do. We put out a call for papers normally around October and November each year. So watch for that this year. I'm assuming it'll be around the same timeline, but we'll announce it loudly from FSF.org when it happens. And yeah, people apply, submit proposals. Pretty normal process. And then we have a committee, mainly staff right now, that go through and choose the ones to have. So like you mentioned, we have some longer form sessions that are focused on hands-on training. We also have this year, I know, a session on GIMP. In the past, we've had things like how to replace your laptop's boot firmware with free firmware. Scary, but a lot of people did it and had a lot of fun, you know, under some experienced guidance. So we try to have something exciting like that each year to actually give people a chance to gain new skills and interact with experts in those areas.
What was the most surprising thing that happened at last year's conference?
Oh, I'm going to be totally selfish and say that it was Snowden urging people to join the FSF. that was a big moment
totally
for us.
Cool.
And actually, not to call it a surprise, but we were able to have a full remote. He obviously wasn't in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
No.
So we were able to have a full remote session, including audience Q&A, using only free software on both ends with video. So that was a really remarkable achievement as well.
Yeah, that's definitely good. I mean, I know I get yelled at on this show for using Skype, but you know, we're actually, for those who are watching the video, we're actually using Jitsi for your particular connection. It seems to be working pretty well, so we might end up doing that a little bit more in the future. I've been waiting for open source software to catch up with the commercial software in this area in particular. So I'm glad that this is actually working out. We can hear you. We can see you. You're part of the show and using only open software all the way down, which is really rather cool. How expensive is this? This is not a very expensive conference, is it?
No, it's not. You know, like I said, FSF members get in for no charge, and that's what we're, you know, what we're hoping people will do. So you'll notice that the price for attending the conference as a non-member is almost the same as just becoming a member. So it's set with that all in right. mind. We want people to join us and stick with us rather than come for a one-time event. But, of course, one-time participants are also very welcome.
The first one is free, yes. Well, the first word in Free Software Foundation is, in fact, free as well. So it looks like you might have like a key signing party, too, somewhere in here?
We don't have an official one on the schedule. A lot of times attendees will organize that. We do have a few talks on cryptography, and at least one I know about GPG and key management. And there's always, you know, that's always an important thread of the conference the last 3 years. I get a lot of keys signed there, I know.
Cool. I've got to dig out my key. I'm so backwards in terms of my, you know, sending email and no key signing. I think I still have a registered key on some of the key servers, but I don't even know where my side of that is, which means it's completely useless. I know Jonathan had a couple more questions. Jonathan, you want to jump in here?
Sure. So the U.S. government, you guys, the free software in general has kind of a interesting give and take and love-hate relationship with the U.S. government. I know I was reading a document put out by the Department of Defense just the other day that they were talking about free and open source software. It was surprisingly good, some of the things that they were talking about. So what about the new administration coming in? Do you guys foresee problems or continued growth? What does the FSF think about the future and working with the U.S. government?
Yeah, that's something on everybody's minds. Just for the Department of Defense example specifically, they're doing great work, and we've been talking with them about that as they were preparing that statement. And just actually yesterday, they released their first project under that framework, and they used the Afero GNU General Public License version 3 for it. So we're really excited about the work that's happening there, and we're going to keep talking with them about it. It's been really nice to be invited to be a part of that. As far as the broader administration goes, you know, I would sort of separate into two categories of concerns. One is the concerns that are directly related to our mission, most obviously related to our mission, I should say, you know, as a 501c3. And those are things like, Trump canceled the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement, which was something we had been campaigning against because it was exporting U.S.-style copyright and DRM and patent laws to other countries. So we can be happy about that, even though we didn't kill it for the reasons that we wanted it stopped. But then, you know, he's saying a lot of very disturbing things about encryption, which we think is important. We don't trust that. We see a lot of potential for even more crackdown on whistleblowers than we saw during the Obama administration. But free software, when it comes down to it, isn't inherently a partisan issue. It shouldn't be. You know, we think Republicans and Democrats should both be using free software. And the Democrats, for example, often are closer with Hollywood, which promotes DRM and gives us problems in that area. So in this category of concerns, we're going to just stay focused. We're going to keep an eye on the administration's policies and react, you know, as we always do, to ones that seem to threaten computer user freedom and make it harder for people to use and share free software. But there's kind of a second category of concerns, or things that are less obvious, a lot less obviously related to our mission, that we've had to do some thinking about. We were very concerned about the immigration ban in particular, and we still are. Free software depends a lot on people being able to travel, you know, between countries and collaborate. We've had a problem with our own conference because there's a new hesitation to travel to the United States and deal with the increased border enforcement. So we're keeping an eye on those things as well. The FSF is going to stick up for basic human rights, as part of our commitment to free software. And we're also going to keep an eye on issues that, even though they're not directly about technology or software, actually end up really impacting the free software community and our ability to advance that cause. And I should say, we have, I think I mentioned Kate's keynote is about Trump, and we have a couple of other talks as well during the conference about what free software means in this era and what how free software advocates can see their role as important parts of the social movements that are happening.
So you guys try, it sounds like, to not get caught up in some of the muck of politics, but kind of stay pure to the things that you already care about, rather than trying to take a partisan view?
Yeah, we have very conservative supporters, and we have very liberal supporters. And what they both count on us to do is to effectively promote free software. And it's already a challenging enough mission. So we don't need to introduce, we try to keep the scope for disagreement as small as possible. We don't want to make people feel like they have to be a Democrat or a socialist in order to support free software. And we don't want to make people feel like they have to be a libertarian to support free software. And you can see even within the FSF staff itself, we have a variety of political views. That's a very heated lunchtime discussions over the years about different other political issues. So, you know, the bottom line is, if you want to be freely communicating and associating with allies in your cause, then you need to be using free software to do it. You know, otherwise, somebody else is in control of what you're doing.
Well, as someone that does not neatly fit into the stereotypical free software political spectrum, I appreciate that. Does the FSF, and this is the last question I've got for you, does the FSF do any lobbying? Do they talk to congressmen? Do they lobby on behalf of free software?
We don't do the lobbying in the formal sense. Our ability to do that as a 501c3 is pretty heavily restricted, although not entirely prohibited. But we do try to work with government, and we try to influence government from a policy perspective, particularly by educating constituents and encouraging constituents to take action on an issue-by-issue basis rather than a candidate or a personality-focused basis. So I mentioned our conversations with the DOD. We had some conversations with the White House about the federal source code policy that they published at the end of last year. We regularly are in contact with the Copyright Office trying to get some reforms put in place there. So we communicate, we try to educate, and we try to mobilize constituents. But we don't, lobbying in the United States is such an expensive proposition. It's really not a good use of resources. It's not what our supporters want us to do. It's not the legal structure that we have. What we're trying to do here is build a broad-based movement, and that starts more with grassroots education and mobilization, and less trying to go straight for the top and buy representation. Like, unfortunately, many of the one of our biggest challenges is just the size of amount of resources that are focused on proprietary software and maintaining that industry. So they have the lobbying advantage right now. We're working with the numbers advantage.
Yes, we're almost out of time, but we do have a really interesting question from Emily the Strange in our chat room. We do have a live chat room when we're taping the show. It says, how do they handle the newcomers to the convention? Are there panels and things for like explaining it to people who don't know about it? Also, are there actual hands-on and more practical free software panels there? And she continues, like coding and discussions about how to do more practical projects in free software.
That's a great question. We do. I think the feedback we've gotten is that the conference feels very welcoming to newcomers. Usually as part of my opening, I ask how many people are there for the first time, and it's normally about a half. So
wow.
It's been a very substantial proportion, which is awesome. And just to give you a feel for the conference layout, it's a small area. We have three rooms with talks. They're large, but they're right next to each other, and the hallway track happens right outside that. Our information desk is right there, so it's a very easy environment to navigate. It's not, I know conferences which are much larger, you can feel a little bit lost. I think it's a pretty easy place to get connected with someone that can help show you around a bit. We do have sessions that are focused on newcomers and on also non-technical contributors. I think you'll see those if you browse the schedule a bit. And we do also firmly uphold a safe spaces policy to make sure that everybody at the conference is respected and treated well. And that's, I think, is one of the main reasons why we've had a good number of newcomers attending our event.
Well, you know, so we're almost out of time. I'd like to ask you a couple of final questions. One is there anything we haven't covered yet about the conference in particular or possibly the FSF in general? I mean, we could talk for hours about the FSF, but is there anything that we haven't asked that you want to make sure our audience is aware of listening to the show?
I do want to give a quick reference to an important issue we're working on right now, which is the inclusion of DRM, digital restrictions management, in HTML, the foundation of the web. And that's something being contemplated by the W3C right now. A group of companies, mainly Microsoft, Netflix, Google, Apple, have bonded together and pushed through a standard which is headed towards adoption as an official part of official recommended standard in HTML. And we've been working really hard to stop that. The action on that has really heated up lately. So if people can take a look at defectivebydesign.org and follow the news there, it's something that the W3C really needs to hear from you about. The web was founded on principles of freedom and openness. And this DRM standard basically embeds proprietary plugins in every browser so that Netflix doesn't have to allow people basic rights like fair use and private backups for the media that they're watching. So it's a nasty policy. We're trying to stop it. That's one thing I wanted to get out there that people really should be paying attention to right now.
Definitely. That URL is in our show notes. So if you go to the homepage for the show, you'll be able to talk about anything that we've actually talked about today. The two final questions I usually ask people, I think I know the answer to one of them, which is Emacs or VI?
Definitely Emacs for me. But and I will say that I was just joking about this the other day. The Emacs tutorial is still part of the official staff orientation at the FSF. But we have had plenty of sysadmins over the years, in particular, who prefer VI for Vim for some cases. So, but you won't find any Vim merchandise in our store. It's all Emacs reference mugs and reference books.
Well, I don't know if you're familiar with my relationship with GNU Emacs because I've been using it over the years. And in fact, the Pretty Printer is mine. I wrote the Pretty Printer.
Awesome. Yeah, I didn't know that you were involved with it, and I appreciate that. You know, for my, I guess my best Emacs story is that I used it for a time as my actual phone dialer on my OpenMoco. If I was calling you, it was coming from Emacs.
Nice, nice. Well, I was pretty amazed when the first time I invoked GNUs to read my mail for the first time in some sort of sane client, and it said loading pp.el, and I went, "Yes, my code! My code's being used by every GNUs user. It's so awesome! It's great! It's great!" Actually, when I posted that code to the Emacs mailing list, Richard actually called it brilliant, and so he wrote me back right away and said, "I need to put this in there because there wasn't a Pretty Printer before mine." So that was really cool. So yes, I have a little bit of me ships in every copy of GNU Emacs. So very
Thank
cool.
You.
Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome. And so I usually also ask what's your favorite scripting language? Are you a programmer, or are you doing stuff with coding?
You know, I'm not a programmer by training. It's something that I worked on when I first, I used to run a bulletin board system, and I really wanted to be, you know, a hacker when I was a teenager, so I have that background. But at the FSF, I learned some Python, and I learned some Emacs Lisp. But I have to say, for the last 6 years since I've been executive director, I get very little time to work on those things. It's a bit sad, but Python and Emacs Lisp have been the two that I've used the most over the years.
Well, one out of two is not bad. It's okay. I'm a poor guy, of course. So I sort of refuse to learn Python, but it keeps being thrust on me more and more in various places of other people who have chosen to use Python. And I believe in total choice. I believe you should be able to use what you want to use. It's part of what the whole free software movement is all about. But when you use something I don't know, it makes it harder for me. And I'm an old dog now. I'm trying not to learn too many new tricks before I'm done and retired. But there we go. Hey, John Sullivan, it's been wonderful having you on the show, talking both about Leave Your Planet and also filling in some backstory about what the FSF is all about and telling us what your current mission stuff are. Thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you so much, Randall. Thank you, Jonathan. It's really been fun. I appreciate you having me. I look forward to seeing everybody at the conference in a couple of weeks.
Awesome. Awesome. That's John Sullivan, director of the FSF. What do you think, Jonathan?
He's not a wide-eyed raving lunatic like the FSF sometimes is thought to be full of.
Hey, careful. We were nice to them in the show. Come on.
No, that's my point. He was awesome. And what the FSF does is awesome. And yes, among some people, they have this bad rap. And I just appreciate the fact that they're out there fighting the good fight, and they're doing it as, you know, as reasonable people. So I guess where that comes from is you find people that are fans of the FSF in the forums and on Reddit and whatever. And, you know, some of these guys are the wide eyed, you know, no, you can't say that, or, you know, open source is evil and you have to be free source, or you have to be free software instead of open source software. And, you know, it's nice to see that the FSF is not actually full of those halfway crazy people. they're the good guys.
And it's only halfway full of fully crazy people. No, just kidding.
Well, I wasn't going to go there, Randall.
Anybody, I'm not gonna use the airwaves to tell this show, but if anybody sees me in person and they buy me an adult beverage, I will describe the time that Richard Stallman and Eric Raymond and Mad Dog were all on the same cruise ship and were yelling at each other across the room. But I'm not gonna tell that on the airwaves. So if you see me in person, now you've got a motivation to come up to me and say, here, I'll buy you a drink if you tell me the story about the cruise ship day. So yes. Anything else before I talk about who's coming up?
No, that was all I had.
And I should shut up now before I dig a deeper dive. Let's talk about who's coming up. We've got next week is SIMP. That's Managed Ecosystem for Secure Operations based on Puppet. Just added to the schedule, right from scale, in fact, is ANCHOR with an E, A-N-C-H-O-R-E, which is Analysis, Compliance, and Operational Best Practices for Containers. You know, if you want to keep your containers up to date and audited to make sure you don't have any CVEs triggering in your containers, this looks like great software to be able to do that. Hub Zero, which is a platform for dynamic websites supporting research and education, PG Backrest, Postgres Backup and Restore software, just also added to the schedule, just actually about 2 days ago. Screen Studio, which is records and streams your full resolution desktop and webcam and text overlays. Really great for doing demos and stuff and or teaching classes and stuff. This looks like some really cool stuff. I'm going to have to definitely play with this and stuff. And how many times can I say stuff in one sentence? Anyway, they let anybody do this show. All right, so you can find out more about this on our homepage, twit.tv/floss, including the show notes for today's show. So if you missed any of those URLs during the audio or video part, they'll all be there. In fact, there's three or four other URLs we didn't even mention there. Now, if you have any other suggestions, please email me. So in other words, if you have a project that wants to be on the show, you tell the community coordinator or project leader, you know, beneficial dictator for life, that sort of thing, tell them to email me, merlin@stonehenge.com. And if I said that too quickly, you can go to the homepage for the show, and it's listed there in big, bold letters. I am continuing to book Q2, open up all of May, I think, actually, just now. We do have a live stream. We took a few questions from there. Emily Strange, thank you very much for your numerous questions today. That's at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time on Tuesdays at live.twit.tv, according to whatever Pacific time uses for DST. We just went to DST just a couple days ago, way ahead of Europe. We are ahead of Europe on that one. Okay. You can follow us at Floss Weekly on Google Plus or at Floss Weekly on Twitter. You can follow me at Randall L. Schwartz on Google Plus and also at Merlin on Twitter. I am going to be at the upcoming YAPSE in North Carolina. I may have to go over and say hi to John. I'm also going to be at OSCON, and I'm going to be at the Red Hat Summit. So I'm going to be at in Boston and Austin in the first 2 weeks of May. So it'll be a trip not to get confused. So if you're at any of these conferences, please come up and say hi. And if you want the full story about the cruise, be sure to buy me an adult beverage or make sure I have three or four in me already. Then I'll tell you the full story. Hopefully, still could also be at Dragon Con coming up in Hotlanta in September. Anything you want to plug, Jonathan?
Nothing to plug, but I'll tell a real quick story about the conference I went to. So it was an FPGA conference and mostly government guys from the DoD there. They start talking about what they need to do to improve FPGA security and all this. And I say, well, the most opaque thing about FPGAs right now is the fact that the tool chain is so locked down. It's all proprietary. Have you guys looked into making it open source? And of course, there was this kind of collective gasp and silence in the room. And, you know, I found out later that I got nicknamed the open source guy for even asking the question. What I didn't realize is that Intel, Altera, and Xilinx representatives were there. And at least one of them came up to me afterwards and like, that's a really good question. Here's the reasons we can't do that, but we're listening. We get that that's a problem. So wow. I was the open source guy at the Department of Defense FPGA conference the other week.
Well, Jonathan, I've got to say, we're getting out of the end of the show here. I want to thank you once again for taking the co-host slot on this week and helping me ask really useful and important questions to our guest, John Sullivan. Thank you once again.
Yep, it was good to be here. And hopefully John Sullivan does not hate us for talking about him afterwards.
We try not to make it too bad that way. And we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.